Drive Time on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Zurich. For pensions, protection, savings and investments. At Zurich, we deal in peace of mind.
Now, a new Gortha recruitment campaign, as you've been hearing, has been announced today by the new Justice Minister, Jim O'Callaghan of Fianna Fáil. The 2025 Gortha recruitment campaign will open for applications on the 6th of February for 3 weeks, with new trainees eligible for increased training allowance of €354 per week. Joining me now to discuss this and other matters related to justice, home affairs and migration, I'm joined by Jim O'Callaghan. Can I talk to you first about the Gortha recruitment campaign that you've announced today? It was such a feature, wasn't it? Gortha numbers and so on, and policing during the election campaign. What's your plan?
Well, the plan is to launch the campaign next week on the 6th of February, and it's to try to attract people into An Garda Síochána. The reason we're trying to attract them in is that everything that I and the government are trying to do in Justice Cormac really can't be achieved unless we have a strong and effective Garda force. And listen, the thing I emphasised today, and I want to emphasise it again on the radio to you, is we're very lucky in this country. We have a police force that has the trust of the vast majority of people living in this country, and that's something that's fairly unique. It doesn't happen all around the world. As you know, it's been difficult to try to keep the numbers up in An Garda Síochána. We've done things over the past number of years in terms of increasing civilianisation. We now have 3,500 civilian people working within the force, but at present we have 14,100 attested members. And what the government seeks to do is to ensure that we can try and recruit up to 1,000 members each year. It's difficult because we're in full employment. And
so 1,000 members each year is the target, Minister. Well, that would leave us with attrition of about 400, according to the GRA earlier in the programme, per annum. That would leave us in or around 16,500, which is, by the end of 5 years, which is way off your promise during the campaign.
Well, Cormac, I want to try and deal with the recruitment this year in 2025, and I want to see if we can try and recruit 1,000 this year. And if you look at the numbers, say, in 2023, there were 786 recruits that came into Templemore in 2023, 629 last year. The reason for the slight decline was that there were 5 intakes in 2023, 4 intakes in 2024. But the message we need to get out there, people aren't going to join the Gardaí simply if we're talking about statistics. We need to tell people that it is a great job, and it's a job that people should consider engaging in. And like the great opportunity
now, it's a tough job as well.
It's a very tough job, and they feel overburdened.
Gordy, absolutely. But they feel overburdened, Gordy, on the beat, they'll tell you. And if you're only recruiting 1,000 with an attrition of €400, and it's way off your the target you've set yourself, so where is that going to leave Gortha morale?
Cormac, the objective here is to try to tell the public, young people, and indeed people up to the age of 49 years of age, if they're doing a sedentary office job and they want to change, that they should consider applying for membership of An Garda Síochána. It's a very fulfilling career. You do exciting work. There's variety every day. You're not doing the same thing in a sedentary lifestyle, sitting down at a desk each day. I would love to be able to give a commitment that we'd be able to recruit even more numbers, but we need to be realistic and recognise that it's a very competitive market out there for new people seeking employment, and that the Garda Síochána is competing with lots of other jobs. But what I would do is I would appeal to people to consider it, because it's such a worthwhile job, and it's that's committed in the public service.
How do you stop the exodus from An Garda Síochána?
Well, the numbers have gone down a bit last year. There was a number of resignations, but you'll note as well that we increased the retirement age. The retirement age has now gone up to 62, and that has resulted in more people staying on. The way we stop people leaving the force is to try and treat them well, to try to ensure that they have a good quality of life and a good package within An Garda Síochána. And when you look at the numbers who actually leave the force as a percentage, it is particularly low. It's lower than other aspects of the public or civil service.
It's acutely felt, given the number, the total number we have. A listener says to 51551, could you ask Minister O'Callaghan, will Gorthy, who'll reach 62 years this year, be allowed to continue working if they want to? Retirement age went from 60 to 62, as you've alluded to. To retain the number, should it be increased?
Well, yes, is the answer to your listener's question. I spoke with the commissioner about this last Friday. He was telling me that already people who are coming up to the age of 62 are looking for extensions. I would actually like to see it extended up to 65 years of age. There's a lot of expertise within An Garda Síochána. We shouldn't be losing it, as was the case a number of years ago.
Is that the plan then?
And well, it's something I'm going to consider in terms of looking at how the recruitment campaign goes. This is a project that needs to be constantly appraised and assessed, Cormac. We need to see how the recruitment goes and the first recruitment of the year, and let's hope it's a success. And I would appeal to people out there who may not have thought of a career in Garda Síochána to consider it, because it's a very fulfilling career.
We have a big problem in towns and cities across Ireland, and in the capital as well, of violence and antisocial behaviour and stuff like open drug dealing. How do you stop that?
Well, the way you try to stop it is that you try and get more Gardaí out in the beat. If there are more Gardaí on the street, the public who are out in the public domain will feel a greater sense of protection. They feel a greater sense of confidence. It is the case that when you look around parts of the city, and I know this isn't just Dublin, but it's other cities as well, we see open drug dealing. The only way that's going to stop is through Gardaí presence on the streets. And that's why I said to the Commissioner Friday, I said it again today, that I want to see Gardaí getting away from desk-based jobs. That's where we're bringing in civilians into the force. I want to see the Gardaí out on the street.
Yeah, you don't need more Gardaí in the street to stop open drug dealing. I could bring you down now to parts of Dublin City where I know for a fact that there's going to be open drug dealing. Why? Because I see it regularly. Why aren't those people stopped?
So the reason, that the way to stop that is by having Garda presence on the street. Like, there's no other method by which that can be stopped.
Why aren't they picked up now is the question.
Because there needs to be more Gardaí on the street, and that's something that I'm urging the Commissioner to do. And once there are more Gardaí in the street, there's a greater visibility. That will deter people from doing things openly. Listen, we need to recognise there probably is going to be drug dealing, but what's irritating people is that they see it being done in open places and they believe there's no sanction happening for it. I want to see Garda presence. The only way we can try and counteract that is through a visible Garda presence.
Let's talk about home affairs and migration now as well, because you're promising a move away from the reliance on private providers and delivering 14,000 state-owned beds by 2028. When will that happen? When will that start?
Well, it's going to start fairly promptly. I haven't yet got responsibility for the accommodation from what was the Department of Integration, but I will be meeting with my colleague Norma Foley, who has responsibility for it present, and I'll be discussing how we're going to approach that with the Director General of the Department. It is essential that we have in place a system of accommodation that isn't dependent upon my department having to go around frantically looking for new sources of accommodation for people who come in here seeking international protection. We need a more reliable source for it, and that's why state-owned accommodation is the preferable way to go. We saw the impact that looking for hotels, which can have a negative impact on local communities, has had in the past, and I and the government want to try to get away from that.
And we're promised as well, since Catherine Day's report, reception centres. Is that part of your plan, that they'll be built finally?
Well, we need to look at it. Things have changed considerably since Catherine Day's report was produced, and the numbers that are seeking international protection in Ireland have grown very significantly. This year there are 18,500. The year before there are 13,500. We need to, I suppose, look at it in both ways in terms of trying to provide accommodation, but we also need to look at what it is that's attracting people here and try to ensure that if people come here, they seek international protection and are refused international protection, that there's a consequence for it.
That may be fair enough.
The consequence for it must be that they leave.
Yeah, that may be fair enough. But if the reception centres that Catherine Day outlined were built at the time, maybe the public service and public system wouldn't be under as much pressure. So is that part of your plan or not?
Well, I don't think reception centres would be able to cope with the numbers that came in last year. What we need to do is to provide accommodation centres. And if you look what's happening up in City West now, that's now an alternative place where people can make their applications for international protection. We have to recognise that the ability to roll out the level of service and quality of the service that we're rolling out must be affected by the numbers that are coming in. We simply can't provide state-of-the-art.
So no commitment on the reception centres?
No commitment.
Okay. Can I ask you about Sinn Féin's High Court challenge to super junior ministers attending cabinet meetings? What's your response to that? I mean, that's a serious risk to the government, isn't it?
Well, anyone's entitled to take an application before the courts. My own view is that the application is misguided. Yes, Article 28 says the government can be made up of no more than 15 members, but that doesn't mean that other people cannot attend cabinet. We know the Chief Whip attends cabinet and her presence is absolutely essential. We know the Secretary General to the government attends cabinet, and frequently, although I've only ever attended one cabinet meeting, frequently I'm told that junior ministers present at cabinet, as do other persons from state
agencies. Every now and again, maybe, but as a matter of course, I mean, have you got legal advice, this government, that they would be covered by cabinet confidentiality and privilege, for example?
Well, I'm certain that if the Attorney General, Rasa Fanning, had concerns about this, he'd have brought it to the attention of the government. But can I deal with the confidentiality?
Hang on a second here before you move on. Is that an explicit yes that Rasa Fanning, the Attorney General, says this is constitutional, this arrangement?
No, this application, the application hasn't even been made today. A leave application was made today. I haven't had an opportunity to discuss it with the Attorney General, nor has any other members of the government.
I do understand but this, notwithstanding this application, it is an open secret, is it not, that this government and previous governments have been flouting the 15-minister limit as set out in the Constitution. And my question is, has it been discussed within government circles that this is allowed, this arrangement with the super juniors attending cabinet, that it's allowed within the constitutional parameters?
I believe it is allowed. I don't think there's any issue in respect to it. You talk about it possibly constituting a breach of cabinet confidentiality. I don't think that's a decent argument. I don't think it's a good argument. Just because an issue is confidential between individuals doesn't mean that they're not entitled to share that with other persons who remain bound by the confidentiality of it.
Really? So you could talk to me about what's discussed at cabinet privately?
I couldn't. If I had a relationship with you, if you were a lawyer or somebody whose contact I had to engage with in order for the purpose of receiving the advice, I could discuss it with you.
Okay.
But like the idea that only the 15 people at cabinet can discuss or be told what's said at cabinet is absurd. Sure, civil servants are told about it subsequently.
Okay, well that's
ministers are told about it. The public is told about it. The confidentiality is there to protect individual submissions and discussions from individual members of cabinet that can't be revealed afterwards.
Okay.
And the presence of junior ministers there, in my opinion, and of course it's a matter for the courts ultimately, if St. Pat Daly's brought the application, in my opinion it doesn't violate Article 28.
Well, let's see if the High Court will agree with you or Pat Daly. Anyway, can I ask you about the storm? Because people are livid. People are really angry, Minister, at the government's response and the slow restoration of power and water and Wi-Fi and communications and heating and basic services, really. Was the government unprepared for this?
Well, listen, I can understand public concern about this. If you've been without electricity or been without Wi-Fi for a number of days, it is more than irritating and it's a huge inconvenience to people. But all I can say is that we were exposed to what there's no doubt about was the worst storm in living memory. It had inflicted huge damage on the Midlands and parts of the country. And the government is doing its best to respond to the damage that's been caused. And that damage, the severity of it means it can't be rectified overnight. And in fairness to the Taoiseach, he was down in Roscommon today. I know my colleague Minister Brown was in Longford, Cavan and Monaghan as well. Government ministers are out there exhorting local authorities and statutory agencies to expedite this matter so that we can get these services back for people.
Yeah, I know you're at a disadvantage because you're in meetings all day on other matters, but I don't think inconvenience is the word I'd use based on the testimony we're getting to 51551. One final question on this, and you mentioned the Taoiseach being down in affected areas, and Micheál Martin, we heard him. He said, we've done all we can to prepare for this. So it really strikes me that the logic of that is that the precedent for a red level storm from now on is that people might have to wait 2 weeks for the restoration of power.
I disagree with that. I think when you recognise that hopefully we're not going to have too many red level storms, and it was the worst storm in living memory, I think that needs to be emphasised. But we are very much dependent upon the consequences and the strength of the storm when it comes to the rectification of the damage. People are working tirelessly in order to rectify the damage that's been done. I fully understand not only the inconvenience, the annoyance, the pain, the suffering of individuals who've been affected by it, but government is working flat out to ensure that these problems are resolved and the damage is rectified as quickly as possible.
Thank you for joining us on Drive Time. Minister Jim O'Callaghan, Míle Buíochas.